Continuing with the impact of World War II on Grand Rapids, for the Blend and Paper Company, the war brought many difficulties. There were critical shortages of just about everything needed to manufacture paper and carry out expansion. Government price controls, ceilings, limitations on manufacturing all added to the problems. At least the company derived some benefit from the production of carton paper. That's the paper that was used to line things like ammunition boxes, which required very little sulfate for the war effort. A shortage of labor was the greatest single difficulty faced by the Blend and Paper Company during the war years. As a good share of the experienced mill force either enlisted or was drafted, many in Grand Rapids had their first opportunity to work for the company. The results were not always satisfactory. The finishing room foreman wrote to his men in the armed forces, "The wheels of the mill still turn and things go on at a heavy pace. The influx of new faces is still pretty heavy, and some of them stick, but others we never even get to know. We've had no less than 50 fifth hands who have lasted all the way from 3/4 of an hour up to a couple of weeks." Women employees had for decades been mainly relegated to office functions, but because of the war, they found employment in other sections of the mill. An employee noted, "You wouldn't know this place for you to walk in. There are so many new faces all around here and women all over. Sure does seem strange. The most fun is to watch some of the boys slick up and smile when the women had their way." A prisoner of war camp for German soldiers was established in the Grand Rapids area. It was just a few miles north of Deer River, but it certainly brought the war a bit closer to home. No visitors were allowed at the camp or in the area surrounding it. It was in an isolated area then, and the guards assigned to the place had a relatively easy assignment. Occasionally, they even took prisoners into Deer River, including a stop for beer. You can be very assured that in Germany there were no POW camps where the inhabitants were invited for an excursion to a beer hall. Planning to take advantage of the rather lax situation, two young men, neither one of them spoke English, were sure that they could easily escape the camp, and then they were going to make their way back to Germany and rejoin their army unit and once again fight for the fatherland. Well, how are they going to do that? In a dictionary, they found a tiny map, one of those things about an inch and a half by an inch and a half in size, and it showed an outline of the United States with a little squiggly line running through the middle, and that was depicting the Mississippi from northern Minnesota to New Orleans. Well, looking at that map, obviously that's a very short distance and a very easy trip. So yes, they would head down the Mississippi to New Orleans. Well, lumber and supplies were left over from the repairs that had been made readying the place for reuse as a prison, and surreptitiously they found an isolated spot near the water, and working when they could, they built a rough-looking boat and then pilfered some food supplies and had it stocked. They easily made their escape and then headed off on what was to be their quick journey to New Orleans, where they would find a boat headed for Germany. Yeah, there's lots of boats headed from New Orleans to Germany at this point in the middle of World War II. Huh? Well, they launched as they met a maze of streams and lakes and soon were quite lost. It took them 5 days to cover the short distance to Jay Gould Lake, which is just west of Grand Rapids. And there, in the middle of that lake, they soon had people gathering on the shore, looking at their peculiar boat that was going more in circles than in any purposeful direction. The sheriff was called and soon had them in custody and headed back to their camp. The great escape had not quite worked out. But there was another problem that was very definitely involved with those prisoners. They were taught the basic lumberjack skills that were needed to cut down trees and get wood, and they were soon cutting pulpwood, which in turn was being sent to the Blend and Paper Company, where the supply was very limited during those years. For the work, the prisoners received 10 cents an hour. The use of German manpower aroused considerable ire on the part of Minnesota lumberjacks. Many of them joined the Timber Workers Union, which had had difficulty in recruiting members previously, but now abounded with them. And the union threatened to call a strike unless the prisoners' unfairly competitive woodcutting halted. Because wages of the professional lumberjacks were low, the charge was made that fascist criminals lived under better conditions in the prison camps than the Minnesotans who had chosen to work in the woods as an occupation. Washington officials decided that the German contribution was necessary, and all the union protests were simply ignored. By the summer of 1944, the exhortations to the civilians of Itasca County to buy war bonds and stamps was stronger than ever. When the fifth war loan drive raised money more slowly than expected, Grand Rapids businessmen placed a newspaper ad depicting a grim, intense-looking helmeted soldier. The caption read, "I died today. What did you do?" Purchases immediately increased, and eventually the quota set for Itasca County was surpassed by a wide margin. On a Thursday in April of 1945, Grand Rapids received the news of the death of President Franklin D. Roosevelt. Within a few hours, flags in town were at half-mast. Saturday afternoon was set aside for mourning, and the Herald Review reported, "Seldom, if ever, was there less activity in Grand Rapids." Plans for a local celebration when the war ended in Europe had been made long in advance, but when VE Day was announced in May, the townspeople scrapped those plans. Like most of the nation, they followed President Truman's suggestion that everyone keep working to support the war effort in the Pacific and to commemorate success in Europe with a simple thanksgiving for past victories. Stores and businesses remained open in Grand Rapids. Special church services were held the Sunday after the announcement. Editorially, Rossman pointed out that while the first goal had been met, victory over Japan was still a vast, uncertain, and distressing task. The war in the Pacific continued, and the seventh war loan was launched with much publicity in Grand Rapids. Many local citizens turned out to watch an army demonstration of attack methods using the newest military equipment and arms. When victory was at last achieved in Japan in August, and the war was really over, residents filled the streets of downtown Grand Rapids for an informal but jubilant celebration. During the following weeks, the Herald Review noted that everyone was looking forward to the day when the boys came home. With the war over and fighting forces returning in large numbers, an acute housing shortage developed across the nation. Wartime demands had slowed new construction, and the country needed time to convert production back to civilian goods. Anyone in Grand Rapids who could temporarily offer a room for rent was urged to do so. The older men who returned to Grand Rapids generally found former jobs waiting for them. The paper mill and other businesses that hired during the war years had clearly stated that positions were temporary, depending upon the return of former workers. But those who had left high school to join the armed forces could not find jobs so easily. Rossman advised them in an editorial to take advantage of the various veteran benefits available for further education. Gradually, normalcy returned, and in 1946, a rural mail carrier who had formerly bought a new vehicle each year purchased the first new car in Grand Rapids in half a decade. In contrast to the 1930s, the 1940s were marked by economic strength and widespread United States prosperity. At the beginning of the decade, Lawrence Rossman wrote a booklet titled "At Grand Rapids, Itasca County, and the Herald Review," and already he was conveying an optimistic tone regarding the immediate economic future for the region. He recounted all the advantages that Grand Rapids enjoyed. The Blandon Paper Company operated one of the most modern paper mills of its kind in the world. The surrounding agricultural and mining industries contributed to the well-being of the county and of the town, and because the largest city in northern Minnesota, Duluth, was 80 miles away, Grand Rapids was an important trading center serving a very large area, so that important role was certainly continuing. Rossman noted that the retail sales in Grand Rapids in 1940 averaged almost twice as much per capita as in comparable towns in Minnesota, indicating that Grand Rapids attracted buyers from throughout Itasca County, as well as increasing numbers of summer tourists. The publisher concluded, that the unusual combination of resources and activities in the Grand Rapids area held promise for continued growth. And next time we'll see what some of that growth is.